Thanks everyone for coming out Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock on this weekend before Christmas. It's also the anniversary of the day that Krishna spoke the great song of God, the Bhagavad Gita. I'd like to thank those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes and invite your correspondence, feedback. My email is at utahkrishnas@gmail.com. We also have a membership class online at our website, utahkrishnas.org. I'd like to thank those that have taking the membership class, become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I'd like to talk to you today about when to be happy. We can get so focused on the things that we want, our dreams, our goals, that it consumes us. We're not going to be happy until it happens. I've found that anything that we have to have in order to be happy means that we're out of kilter. We're out of balance. We've all heard people say, I can't be happy until I get a husband. And we've heard someone say, I can't be happy until I get rid of my husband. We've heard people say, I can't be happy until I get a bigger house. I can't be happy until I get that promotion. The key is that when our goals and our dreams start to consume us and frustrate us, we start losing our peace and stop enjoying life, it's a sign that we're holding on too tightly. The solution is to release it and say, God, or Krishna, which is our name for God, I'm turning it over to you. You know what I want. You know the desires in my heart. You put them in me in the first place, so I'm not going to live frustrated because it hasn't happened in my way and it hasn't happened on my timetable. This is where Duryodhana missed it. If you're familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, you know that Duryodhana had to have the kingdom. The Pandavas were perfectly willing to share the kingdom with him. They were perfectly willing to compromise. In fact, at one point, the Pandavas even went off into the desert and started their own city called Kandavapras, and they allowed Duryodhana the reign of the main city, Hastinapur. But Duryodhana would not compromise. He would not settle for peace. He only wanted the kingdom uncontestedly. He wanted the eradication of the Pandavas. So when he refused to give them as much land as would fit under the head of a pin, then he precipitated a disastrous world war. And his father, Dhritarashtra also. Dhritarashtra in those days, the eldest son of the king would become the king. It was a law of primogeniture. Unfortunately, Dhritarashtra was born blind. And because of that handicap, he was disqualified from being king. He was passed over, and his youngest brother, Pandu, became king. But he always harbored this ambition and this resentment that he should become king. So he put that ambition, he hoped to become king through his son, Duryodhana, who had no real legitimate right to the throne. So all of his life, Dhritarashtra kept caving in to Duryodhana. Duryodhana said, you either give me this, you either participate in this conspiracy, or I will kill myself. I will commit suicide. I have to have it my way. So that imbalance, which Duryodhana suffered from, he was able to keep, he was able to bring Dhritarashtra in the wake of that. And Dhritarashtra knew that it was wrong, it wasn't righteous, but at the same time he had this little niggling of ambition in his own heart, and so he was easily manipulated. It was only after the Kurukshetra War, when Duryodhana and all of his 100 brothers lay dead, killed by the hand of Bhima, that Dhritarashtra began to realize that he had lived his whole life out of balance. And finally, his brother Vidura came back from pilgrimage, and with very, very harsh, you might call it tough love, he finally cut loose the knot of his ambition. Dhritarashtra at that time was living as a mendicant in the palace of Yudhisthira. Vidura came back and he said, alas, how great are the hopes of the living being to continue his life. Here you are living like a household dog in the palace of Dhritarashtra, taking foodstuffs from the hand of Bhima, who killed your 100 sons. So at that moment, Dhritarashtra finally, after a lifelong of illusion, he released his ambition. He saw the writing on the wall, and he let it go. And he walked out of the palace into the forest to do penances and meditation. So at last, and only when he released what he had to have, did he find in his life at the end a little bit of peace. We need to be able to say to God, I trust your timing. You know what's best for me, and even if it never happens, I'm going to be happy and I'm going to trust you. In other words, you've heard people say, well, I've got to attend this college. I've got to get accepted. But you, at the same time, need to be prepared to say, if for some reason you don't get accepted in that college, you're still going to be happy. I've got to get married. I need to get a wife. I need to get a husband. At the same time, while you're waiting for that to happen, don't let the lack of a wife or a husband steal your joy. Be happy during the interval. Enjoy your life. Show God that we're trusting Him, that we're putting control of our life in His hands. We don't have to struggle to make things happen. I heard about a textile factory where the machines brought in all these various strands and wove them into a complicated fabric. And there was a sign that said, if your strands get tangled, immediately call the foreman. One new employee, her strands started to get tangled, and then she was trying to sort it all out. She was trying to fix it and get it right. And it was getting worse and worse and worse and worse and more hopeless. Finally, the foreman strolled by. He said, what are you doing? She said defensively, I'm doing my best. Pointedly, the foreman said to her, doing your best includes calling the foreman. Sometimes Krishna will ask us to release something that we hold very, very dear. Sometimes He will ask us to put that dream, that ambition, that promotion on the altar. Sometimes we have to show Him that we don't need that in order to be happy. Maybe we're standing on a promise to get well after a prolonged sickness. But even if we don't get well, we still have to go through life with a smile on our face, being good to people, and stay in faith. Pass the test of not having it my way in order to be happy. You don't have to have a bigger house or a bigger car in order to be happy. The problem doesn't have to turn around before you enjoy your life. It is said, happy is the person who learns to wait as he prays and never loses his patience, for God's time is the best time. Put it on the altar. Don't let it frustrate you. Don't let it steal your joy. Have the attitude, I've done all I can. Now I'm letting it go. Lord, you do the rest. I'm leaving it up to you. Whatever happens, I'm going to be happy. In the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna over and over and over again, na sojati, na kanchati. Don't hanker after anything. Everything is provided for you if you keep righteous, if you keep pious, if you keep God in the center of your life. Whatever you need will be supplied to you in abundance. Neither lament if you something comes your way and you become attached or dependent upon it, and some or other by God's arrangement you lose it. Don't go around holding your head, moaning, and reminiscing about the good old days. Be equipoised, both in gain and loss, in happiness and distress. The Lord Himself says to Kardama Muni, quote, my dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion by worshiping me, especially persons like you who have given up everything unto me, there is never any question of frustration. As long as we're trusting Him, He'll get us in His time and in His way to where we're supposed to be. There's something powerful about letting it go to Krishna. Don't miss the joy of this moment because something didn't turn out. We're not going to fight and get aggravated every time we don't get our own way. About a month ago, on a Monday, I got two calls. One lady said she wanted to buy $4,000 worth of colors for an event in North Carolina. And the same day, I got a call from a couple guys that had a color run arranged in Idaho, and their colors hadn't arrived from India, and they needed $3,000 worth of colors. And both of them were going to consummate the transactions on the following day. So I said to my Bobby, I said, tomorrow we stand to make $7,000 for the temple in one day. Not for ourselves, but for the temple. So I was all excited. Got up the next morning, the lady who had called the day before, she called me up and she said, you know, after I put the phone down yesterday, I just happened to look on the internet and I found the name of a supplier in India. Actually, he was our supplier. I called him up and he promised to air freight me the colors over for just a little bit more than what you were quoting. And I said, well, would it help if I dropped down, you know, a few more $100? She said, it certainly would, but I'm not going to make a decision today. I'll call you tomorrow. She never called. All right. So our $7,000 day is down to $3,000, okay? So the fellows from Idaho, they called up. They gave me their credit card number on the phone. They picked up 16 or 18 boxes. Oh, I forgot to tell you. They called and they said, you know, our colors are going to come soon from India, so we don't want to order lavishly. We just want the minimum. So instead of $3,000 worth of color, can we just get $1,500? I said, sure, no problem. So they came, they paid the $1,500. Tracy helped them load it up in Salt Lake City and they went away. So the next day, they called up and said, out of the blue, the colors were delivered to our doorstep today. Can we bring them back for a refund? So I said, sure, I'll just charge you $100 stocking fee. So from $7,000, we made $100 that day. But I can honestly tell you, it didn't steal our joy. We actually had a good laugh at it. We also actually had a good chuckle. So put on your shoes of peace. You may be walking up a mountain with sharp thorns and sharp rocks, but if you've got a good crafted pair of shoes on your feet, none of those sharp objects are going to bother you. Krishna is going to give you what's coming to you in your due season. He's ready to bring a dream to pass. No person, no sickness, no obstacle, when it's your time, can stop those favors and those blessings from coming your way. Again, from the Ramayana, you may be familiar with the story of Vali. Vali was the king of the monkeys in Kishikind, near where Ram was living in exile. And Vali's brother was Sugriva. But Vali was very obstreperous, very arrogant, very narrow-minded, very prejudicial. So one time, he went into a cave to fight with an enemy, and he posted Sugriva at the entrance of the cave as a sentinel. And he said, don't let anyone else come in. So Sugriva was at the entrance of the cave, and he heard sounds of combat going on for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days. After 6 days, everything went silent. He couldn't hear anything anymore. He waited 27 days, and Vali did not usher forth from the cave. So he was very sad, very depressed. He could only conclude that his brother had perished in the fight. He said the funeral mantras out of respect for his brother, and making a tomb, he rolled a big rock in front of the cave. Well, it so happened that in the combat, Bali and his opponent had gone deeper and deeper and deeper into the cave, and eventually out of earshot of the mouth of the cave. The combat went on for, I don't know, 50 some days. Finally, Bali vanquished his opponent, and he did not appreciate when he was exiting the cave. He did not appreciate that his brother had rolled this big rock in front of the cave. And he totally misinterpreted it to mean that Sugriva was trying to entomb or trap his brother. And in the meantime, Sugriva had gone back, and the monkeys were leaderless. They begged Sugriva to be king, and reluctantly he agreed with the condition that if his brother Vali should miraculously reappear, he would immediately hand over the throne to him. And he kind of took up with Vali's wife. So when Vali got back, already with the impression from the stone that Sugriva was betraying him, and he saw Sugriva sitting on the throne with his wife, he didn't listen to reason. He was absolutely convinced that this man was his betrayer. He pounded Sugriva within an inch of his life, and he exiled him into the forest without giving him the benefit of the doubt. And all the time, Vali's wife is saying, Vali, listen to reason. He's your friend. He's your well-wisher. This is a misunderstanding. You know, he rolled the rock because he thought it was a proper thing to do for you having passed away. He became king only because the monkeys asked him to. And as far as taking it with me, I mean, we're monkeys, right? I mean, we're monkeys. We don't have the highest moral standards here. We're not exactly monogamous. So cut him a little slack. Give him the benefit of the doubt. But Vali would not listen to reason as hard as she tried. He would not change his mind. And because he didn't listen to the advice of his wife, he lost his life. He was found by the arrow of Lord Ramachandra. And as his wife was holding the head of her husband, Vali, in her lap, and crying and sobbing, Lord Ramachandra himself came up and gave her a sterling piece of advice. He said, "You have done everything you could to make him see the light. You have done everything you could to convince him to be a person of reason. He is the architect of his own destiny. It's not your fault that he's lying here now, food for the worms. It is his own bad choices that put him here. Now don't waste your life, don't lose your time lamenting because of his bad choices. You get up and live your life. That even after the death of your husband, God has planned a great future for you." Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, "Dhirastata namoyate." Don't be crestfallen. Don't be taken aback. Don't be chagrined. Even at the greatest loss. And what's the greatest loss that we can sustain in life? It's the loss of this body, isn't it? And that will come at the time of death. But those who learn to be equipoised, to be cool and calm in all circumstances, even at the time of death, dhirastata namoyate, they're sober. They're cool and calm. They're no more upset than you would be if you took off one shirt and put on another shirt. Some of you need to let go of some people who are frustrating you, who are not changing. You've tried, you've done all you could, you've given them the best advice. So it's time for you now to step back and not be upset anymore that they're not changing for the better. You need to come back to that place of peace. You need to feel the freedom of releasing that person to take or not to take responsibility for their own life. I'm not saying in this to release dreams and promises and ambitions. I'm just saying release the worry and the frustration, knowing that Krishna is in complete control. During the days of the Blitz in England, I heard about a father who exited a building with his young son after the building was struck by a bomb. There was another bomb crater in the front yard, and he sought to get safety from the shrapnel in that bomb crater. So he put his little boy aside, and he jumped down into this crater. Then he asked his little boy, "Come on, jump into my arms." But the little boy standing on the edge of the crater, he couldn't see his father. All he saw was this dark, foreboding pit. And he was terrified. He said, "Dad, I can't see you." Dad said, "But I can see you very easily silhouetted against the edge of the crater. Go ahead, that's what matters. You don't need to see me as long as I can see you. Go ahead and jump." And the little boy jumped into the arms of the father, trusting him. Krishna or God is working behind the scenes. You may not be able to see him, but that doesn't mean that nothing is happening. That person you're so worried about, Krishna may have already planted the seeds of change in their hearts. It's only a matter of time before they turn their life around. Now you're trying to make them change. You're trying to convince them to see it your way, and they won't do it. It's aggravating you. It's stealing your joy. "Well, as soon as they change, I'll be happy. As soon as my husband changes, I'll be happy. As soon as my wife changes, I'll be happy. As soon as my wayward teenage son comes back, I'll be happy." Look, life is too short to go through it waiting for something to happen. You need to enjoy it right now. Make a decision right now, right where you are. Enjoy your life. I heard about a man that trained for 6 years for the 1924 Winter Olympics. And it was an event, white water rafting. 6 years of his life, of his youth, he spent 8 to 10 hours learning how to maneuver and navigate rafts in white water rapids. He went to the Olympics and he just missed getting a gold medal. But everyone said, "If you just train another 4 years, you'll definitely get a gold medal." But he had a wife, he had a young son, he had obligations. He really didn't feel like he had the time to dedicate another 4 years to training. So what he did was he put that dream on the altar. He said, "Lord, I don't see a way that I can fulfill this dream right now. If you want to fulfill it, you will find a way where I don't see a way." And then he dedicated himself to raising his family. It so happened that that young boy, that son of his, became infected with the same enthusiasm that he had for whitewater rafting. They would go out into the backwoods, shoot all kinds of weapons, and they bonded together. When the boy was in his early teens, he said, "Dad, do you think that I could start training with an idea of going to the Olympics?" And sure enough, he started training under the mentorship of his father, being inspired by his father. 24 years later, his son entered into the 1948 Olympics and won the gold. And he came back home with a gold medal and he said, "Dad, here, I'm bringing your medal to you." But Krishna had his own way of satisfying that desire. In fact, the father's getting the medal from the son meant so much more to him than it would have if he had won it himself. So when we put things on the altar, it doesn't mean we're abandoning them, we're giving up, we're sidelining ourselves, we're relinquishing our dreams. We're simply saying, "Krishna, I trust you to do it your way." We may have had temporary setbacks. We may have been disappointed in the short term, but never in the long run. In 1975, I was the president of our Hare Krishna temple in Berkeley, California, for 3 years. We ended up at the end of those 3 years with 120 devotees. We bought a 150-acre farm in Mendocino County. We distributed $1 million of transcendental literatures a year. And we had a Rath Yatra, a chariot festival in Golden Gate Park. It was an annual event. But up until then, it had been very, very small time. The last year we organized the Rath Yatra festival in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, Monday morning, after the Saturday event, Monday morning, the San Francisco Chronicle headline, 20,000 people attend Hare Krishna festival in Golden Gate Park on a cold, rainy, and blustery day. So when I was leveraged out due to circumstances, certainly I was disappointed. I had looked forward to spending my whole life cultivating Krishna consciousness in the Bay Area. But that was short term. Today, I'm standing in this wonderful temple in Spanish Fork, Utah in 2012. This is long term, and I can tell you, I'm not standing here as a disappointed man. Thank you very, very much. Turn over the struggle, turn over the frustration to Him. Anything you have to have, or you're counting on having, or you're depending upon, the Lord may intentionally withhold that or remove it so that you learn to trust and depend upon Him. Now tell me if I'm wrong, Sandra, but a lady can normally count upon her husband to protect her. Right? Doesn't a lady like to be rescued, you see, by her fair knight? And nature has made men bigger and stronger and tougher, so that if their wife were ever threatened or they're ever in a precarious situation, the man can save the day, isn't it? What to speak of Draupadi in the Mahabharata, who had not one, two, three, four, but she had five husbands, and they were all great heroes. They were cheated in a game of dice out of their kingdom, their wealth, their possessions, and even their freedom. Because of the crooked game of dice organized by Duryodhana, they literally became slaves to Duryodhana, and they could not do, by the terms of the game, they could not do anything unless Duryodhana allowed them to do it. So not knowing this, they decided to go into the ladies' chambers, and Dushyant, Duryodhana's brother, dragged Draupadi in by her hair, threw her down, and started to take her sarap so that she would be humiliated in the public assembly. And Draupadi knew nothing of what had gone on before. But she saw her five husbands sitting there with their heads down, not doing a thing to help her, not lifting a finger. She had no idea. Can you imagine the level of her frustration? How heartbroken she was. Don't they love me anymore? I've done so much for them. I've borne their sons. And they're not going to intercede. They're big heroes and they're sitting there like loves, like oafs, like morons. Could you imagine the depth of her disappointment, her heartbreak, her despair? So what did she do in that circumstance? She did the only thing she could do. She said, "They may not be able to help me. I may not be strong enough to contend with this big, strong guy who's pulling off the sarap, but Krishna is all powerful, so I will release it."
I will release the heartbreak, the anger, the frustration. I will give it up to Krishna. And she had been trying to keep the sari on her, and she was losing the battle, and she just released it, and she put her hands up in the air, and she said, Krishna, go in. At that point, Krishna manifested himself in a subtle form, seen only to Draupadi, no one else. And as much sari as Disasana is pulling off on the one side, Krishna doled it out on the other side. And finally, Disasana, this big, strong warrior, he collapsed on the floor due to exhaustion. Learn to think. If it works out, great. But if it doesn't, if I have reverses, no big deal. It means that if God closes one door, He's going to open a better door. If He denies me one thing, it means He's got something better in store for me. And no matter what happens, I'm going to enjoy my life. Go out of here today, hopefully lighter, freer. Some of you have been struggling very, very hard to make a dream come to pass, to make someone change. I've got a news flash for you. You're not Krishna. You're not God. That's not your job. So take the pressure off of yourself. Krishna is running the universe. He's working behind the scenes. That same person who causes the sun to rise and set and the seasons to change, He's in full control. You're not in all states' hands, but you're in Krishna's hands. In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was under the illusion that the outcome of the battle was up to him. He thought, if I don't fight, the war will not take place. But Krishna told him differently. He said, I, as the beginning, the middle, and the end, as the creator of the universe, I have already decided that these bad guys are not going home tonight. So whether you fight or not, it's not going to change the outcome. Things are not under your control, they're under my control. So your option is only, do you allow yourself to be an instrument in fulfilling my mission in the earth, or do you want to abdicate that responsibility and go to the forest? Either way, my will be done. The Kurus are not going home today. Krishna already knows what you want, what your dreams are. He's the one that put them there in the first place. Now trust Him with your life. Your future will be in good hands. He knows what's best for you. He's already planned out a life of victory for your future. If you will learn to let go and let God, He will lead you and guide you down the best path. You won't have to struggle to make things happen, to change people for the better. He will make those things happen in His own way and in His own time, and He will bring about the necessary changes in people's hearts, and He will also fulfill all the desires of your own heart and take you to the great places that He wants you to go. And if you're inclined to chant with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.